Are you Invictus? Clint, are you Invictus? Are you Invictus?
What does it mean?
You know, when I started the Invictus Mind podcast, my goal was to unite a bunch of people who had a similar ideology or a similar characteristic traits. Invictus means unconquerable. It's an old Greek word for means unconquerable.
Unconquerable.
So, honestly, it was a new concept to me. I had to Google it when you sent it to me. But yeah, I do my best.
Tell me about what the show, what is your audience looking for? Tell me.
This is your first time here. This is the number one program dedicated to helping individuals maximize their potential and truly become unconquerable. Here we have discussions about what it takes and what it means to experience and magnify political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom.
Yes, I would absolutely say that. I'm going to keep getting up, right? And I keep getting up and I keep pushing forward. And that's the type of mindset that you need to have.
I never lose hope. I never lose faith. My mindset has always been, if I want something, I don't give up.
So let me tell you what is the number one issue when it comes to being unconquerable.
Okay.
And the number one word you have to think about here is not intelligence, not savvy, not strength, none of those things. The number one thing is resilience.
You know I'm Invictus. Come on. All right. I'm Invictus AF.
Well, may I have an initiation question for my tribe?
Okay.
Are you Invictus?
I believe I am.
So yes, I agree. I am Invictus.
I totally agree, man. And I think that if there's anybody on this planet that's unconquerable, it's probably me. I am not the type to take orders, and I am definitely in a position that I can stand up for myself right now. So,
and I was like, no way! I know what that word means now.
yeah, man, very cool concept for a show.
You didn't ask me if I was Invictus.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Invictus Mind podcast, the number one place to understand how to acquire and magnify the skills it takes to achieve political freedom, financial freedom, and spiritual freedom. This is your humble host, Mike Corbell. And if this is your first time on a program, I want to thank you for coming to check us out. And if you like what you're doing here, please subscribe to whatever channel you listen to, or you can watch this video and several others on YouTube. Many of you know this podcast is a very eclectic variety show, and consequently, I tend to have guests from all walks of life. But there is a common theme I like to promote, and that is, what does it mean to be Invictus? Here, we want to discuss the unlimited human potential that each one of us was gifted, and how we can learn to break free from various systems of control that take place, or obstacles or roadblocks in our path towards peace and prosperity. To be Invictus is to be unconquerable, to never stop growing, never stop learning, and always adjusting our sails to catch the waves we need to bring us to our desired destination. Well, that's why I think today's guest is fitting for the program. You know, communication is key to any successful relationship, whether that be a personal or a professional relationship. And though each one of us may learn how to speak when we are just children, effective speaking is a skill that not everyone has, but one that can be learned and mastered. Knowing the skills will provide tremendous value to yourself and others around you. So today I have with me the founder of Master Talk. And what he does is coaching for executives and entrepreneurs on how to communicate more effectively in order to be in the top 1% of their industry. His name is Brendan Kumarasamy. How are you doing today, Brendan?
Good, Michael. How are you, my friend? Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm quite doing well, and you're very welcome. You know, I wanted to start off with this quote that I found in your profile on Podmatch. I just love it. And maybe you can expound on it a little bit. But you said, I believe Elon Musk is a 7-year-old girl who can't afford a communication coach. So it's my duty to help her succeed with my free resources. What was that all about?
Yeah, for sure. I'm happy to expand. I'll tell you the story. It's a little bit long-winded, but hear me out a little bit here. So I was watching a TikTok the other day, Michael. And the TikTok featured Taylor Swift, that we all know and love, or not. I do personally, right? The musician. And she won an award in the TikTok, which is Women of the Year, which is an award that Billboard gives out every year for the best woman in the music biz. So she wins it in 2014. And her speech on the TikTok goes along something along the lines of, you know, your future Woman of the Year is 11 years old right now. She's in choir. She's learning how to sing. And we need to take care of her. And then what happens really quick is the TikTok flips. And 7 years later, Billie Eilish wins Woman of the Year. She's like the youngest inductee in the history of the company. She gets there at 17. She walks there on that stage. She's got her big bulky jacket, a big glass. And she goes, "What's up, guys? Hope you're all doing well." And then she basically talks about how her speech sucks. But then the last 15 seconds, she says something that completely changed my life. She says, "In 2014, I watched Taylor Swift's speech. And I was 11 years old and I was in choir and I was learning how to sing. So the only thing I've left to say, Billboard, is thank you for taking care of me." Long story short, Michael, I heard that story and it changed my life because I thought about the next Elon Musk, who's probably some young girl in Cambodia. And I just asked myself a simple question, dude, which is, what are we doing to take care of her for her communication skills? Nobody gave a shit about Elon when he was 50. So I just told myself I might as well be that person because I'm the only one on earth who realized it.
Well, there you go. So you're going to have to tell me a little bit about your background and how you became an expert in the art of communication and you know, what you do for the folks that you are sitting in front of.
For sure, man. So for me, the story started in college. I went to business school.
Oh, okay.
And I did these things called case competitions. Think of it like professional sports, but for nerds. So while other guys my age were like playing rugby or baseball or basketball, something else dangerous, I wasn't into that stuff. So I did competitions. I presented competitively. That's what I did instead. But then as I got older, Michael, I started coaching a lot of the students in university on how to speak, mostly because the alternative they had was a rock. So they picked me. And then I developed this skill of coaching other people. And that's what led to the YouTube channel, because I felt all the stuff I was sharing wasn't available for free on the internet. So I started posting.
Ah, I gotcha. You know, I you must be familiar with Toastmasters International.
Of course.
I actually had a professional speaker and trainer from Toastmasters on quite some time ago on a podcast, but I joined Toastmasters a long time ago prior to my podcasting career here, but I realized that speaking and communicating effectively is important for all aspects of life. We may have some thoughts rattling around in our head, and some of us have different degrees of influence that we have. But being able to communicate is key to getting people to understand what you're trying to say. And so, you know, when you say that you were in a competition, I think that's cool because I've seen competitions in Toastmasters, and you know, I have a ribbon on the wall right in front of me of I achieved some level from Toastmasters.
That's fun.
But what is it about communication that you think is the most important thing that people are missing? Why is that an important skill that people need to have?
Right. So there's two parts to that. The first part is why is it important? The second part is what to do about it. So the first piece, Michael, is why is it important? I would argue it's not just about the job promotion. It's not just about making money, though all of those things are important. As Warren Buffett says, the best investment he ever made himself was in a communication course. But beyond that, what I'll say is it's much more than that. It's the way that we talk to our families. It's the way that we order food at a restaurant. It's the way that we meet strangers when we travel. It's every moment of our life. It's every interaction of our life. So once we realize that communication is so much more than making money, but rather leading a more fulfilling life, then we realize it's the most important thing that we need to pay attention to. That's why it's important. The second piece that you asked about is what do we do? Like, what's the missing piece? What's the missing link here? In my opinion, the missing link is simple. It's motivation. A lot of us dream about our businesses, the expensive vacations we want to go on, the things we want to buy, the Louis Vuitton purses. When was the last time we dreamed about our communication skills? Never.
Right.
So that's why the answer is a question. And the question is simply this: how would your life change if you're an exceptional communicator? Think about it.
Certainly you have more influence, and with more influence could become more rewards, I suppose, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, and this program, obviously, calling it the Invictus Mind is about personal progress, about personal development. It's about becoming unconquerable, as I mentioned. And I think being able not to just to grow influence, because I think there's three elements to power and success in this world. Number one is the amount of influence you have. Talk about the amount of money you have or the wealth that you have. And of course, just developing power over time. That's really what I think promotes freedom. And so what I like to do is I like to help my audience learn the skills that it takes to acquire, if not all those three of those things, but to really transform that into a life of freedom and prosperity. Being communication probably is the key to do that, especially in a world where influence is one of those driving factors. What do you think?
I completely agree. I'm definitely an advocate of your framework and how communication ties into that, in the sense that communication is definitely a way to increase influence and getting other people to support you. And obviously, as more people support you, you can achieve more. Power is one way of phrasing it. Another piece is just helping you achieve the goal faster. I call it an accelerant of dreams, right? So I guess this is the same thing. Power, accelerant of dreams. Same kind of same side of the different sides of the same coin, basically. That's one piece. The other piece around communication is very directly related to the income level that you have, since you define power as someone who also has more wealth, which equals more power. To a certain extent, I do agree with that. So in that same way, there's different frames of reference here. The first one is most executive leadership positions in any Fortune 500, any company that pay the most money, communication is just a prereq to get in the door. You need to be an exceptional speaker. Not like a Tony Robbins-esque character, but you need to know how to talk and not say filler words, because you're always inspiring people around you to keep working for you. That's basically the job of an executive, to keep people motivated, to keep people on the ball, and to hire the best people. That's essentially what you do as an exec, and you pay the most money in the company to do it. So that's one piece. The other piece of communication that leads to more money is the business owner themselves, the person who is the entrepreneur, the person who owns the business. When you own the business and you're doing less than $1 million a year, you pretty much own every part of the value chain. You do the delivery, you do the sales, you do all the marketing. So if you suck at communication, it's not impossible. I mean, Elon Musk has done it, but it definitely cripples you in a way that reduces your probabilities of success significantly. So that's the other piece, is if you're good at talking, you're good at sales. And if you're good at sales, you're good at money.
Right. But you started the conversation with those people on, the famous position, famous people. I don't know the second person. You said Taylor Swift, and then the youngest winner of the awards. Who is that?
Billie Eilish. I don't think she's from your generation, Michael. She's barely in mine.
But yes, I know that there are plenty of people who are celebrities or would be celebrities that lack communication skills. So somebody, listening to you say that, it's important if you want to become an executive, you want to become, in marketing or in sales. But then they look at these celebrities who, seemingly have fame and fortune, but they don't even know how to speak proper English if that's their native tongue.
Right. And it's a good counter. So here's my counter to the counter. I would say, let's not look for the exception. Let's look for the norm. There's a concept I'm sure you might've covered in the podcast called survivorship bias, right? So survivorship bias, as I didn't know, just a quick lesson on that, means media or people in general, we overemphasize the winners and we underemphasize the losers. Mm. So we look at Mark Zuckerberg, who's like this, 25-year-old kid, obviously he's much older now today, billionaire, super successful. And you don't see the other graveyard of social network startups that lost, like Friendster, that a lot of people don't know about. MySpace, it might be a bit more common, right? So you don't see the dead startups, you just see the winner and you kind of think that you're going to be the winner.
Sure.
So do I think celebrities, a lot of them suck at communication? I do. Do I still think they have power? Absolutely. Do I think most people in power are terrible communicators? Definitely not. I think 80, 90% of them are all exceptional communicators. And we have to always average out for the majority, not the minority.
You made an emphasis about my generation and versus the
to be honest, I don't even know what generation you're in. You might be my age, honestly. You look like a young guy.
I'm proud to be Generation X. But
I don't even know what that means.
Those of us who were born between 1968 and 1984, I guess. So
you definitely look more like an 84 than a 68 for sure.
But the reason I bring that up is because I think the world has transformed over the last decade, really. Like I said, when I went to Toastmasters, I first looked at Toastmasters probably about a decade ago when I realized the importance of communicating in my own industry. I have a sales background and, I was trained by people who would get up on stage and speak in person to people or even across a dinner table or kneecap to kneecap, as you would. But it seems like everything these days is transitioning to the digital age, where now communication is done like we are talking on Zoom. or through podcasts or on TikTok videos. Have you noticed a change, or, you know, being of whatever generation you call yourself, have you only kind of transitioned into this digital age?
Definitely, man. I mean, my first phone I got when I was 19, which wasn't too long, but I'm 26 currently, so it's seven years ago. So there's definitely been a transition for me too. Not as much as previous generations of me though. And I've definitely noticed a big piece. I would say the biggest one being the pandemic, because that forced all of speaking engagements. That's where I felt the most effect personally, where all of it transitioned from in-person, which is where I used to do a lot of my work, and all of it's gotten exclusively online. And even today, post-pandemic, it's still, a lot of it's still online. So I'd say that's the biggest shift that I've seen in the last 10, 15 years. The other shift that I've seen is social media communication, in the sense of, and I think that's an opportunity rather than a threat, where social media in many ways has become the ultimate equalizer. Like, if you have value to share in the marketplace, you don't need to wait for a gatekeeper to help you. And that doesn't just apply for people who want to be thought leaders in personal brands. That also applies if you're a corporate executive. You don't have to wait for somebody to hire you or to get picked by a company. If you create great thought leadership on LinkedIn, as an example, and in profile, and you're known for something on the platform, you're going to get an insane amount of job opportunities that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. So I feel that's another interesting trend, where basically in a nutshell, the people, the leaders who are able to communicate across a variety of mediums, Michael, whether it's guesting on a podcast, so people who can guest on a podcast and present on video and do written really well and give in-person presentations and be engaging virtually, are extremely deadly in the marketplace, because very few possess all of those ways of communicating.
So you pointed out five different things to learn right there. So how would somebody who has none of those actually get started?
100%. So here's the good news. For me, communication is a multiplier effect. It's kind of like juggling 18 balls at the same time. So if we try and juggle all 18, what's going to happen? All of them are going to fall to the ground.
Sure.
So what you need to do is you need to start with the first domino. But the good news is, if you push that first domino, you're actually going to get better really fast. So let's go through them. I call them my easy threes.
Okay.
What are the first three balls that you should pick up, in my opinion, besides dreaming? So it's not pause at each one, so I'm not monologuing too much. So the first one of my easy threes is called the random word exercise. Pick a random word, like phone, like eyes, like ham, sandwich, and create random presentations out of thin air. Think of it like a simplified version of table topics, but the drills are a lot faster because just words. And you want to do that a few times a day. So yeah, that's the first one.
Yeah, you mentioned table topics. I always liked that part of Toastmasters, because they would give you a question and it was just hit you by surprise. And then you would judge based on how you actually engage in conversation. So they might give you a question like, what do you think of George Washington? That was the last podcast. It was somebody talking about George Washington. So the question may be, what do you think of George Washington? And then you'd have to talk for 3 minutes about George Washington, despite how much you knew about the history or whatnot. And so I'm guessing that the random topics that you're talking about is just an exercise. Is that something that you would want to do with a family member or friend, or how does that work exactly?
Yeah, I would say the framing I would take on, which is a bit different than TM, Toastmasters. I'm a big fan of Toastmasters, by the way. Is, I think the only challenge with table topics is it's a bit challenging where people are just getting started. As quickly as, let's say, the random word exercise. What happens with the random word exercise is, if you pick a word like apple, orange, and you do five of these a day, it's super quick. You don't have to think about it too much.
Okay.
And if you do this with your family, like your friends, your sister, your brother, your nieces, your nephew, if you have children, your children, it's actually nice because you hold yourself accountable to them and you get the result a lot quicker.
Okay, cool. And so what was the second thing? You said there was three.
You got it. There's three. So that's the first pin to drop. I would say the second one that I would focus on is question drills. We get asked questions all the time in our life, Michael, from our friends, our family, our colleagues, at work. And it's overwhelming sometimes. I remember 2 years ago when I started podcasting, I got asked the funniest question. Somebody asked me, where does the fear of communication come from? And I was like, I don't know, man, San Diego, Los Angeles. Like, I just had no clue. So I was super reactive, like many of us. Mm-hmm. But instead of being reactive, I became proactive. So what I encourage people to do, Michael, is every day for 5 minutes a day, reflect on one question that you think the world will ask you. Mm. Reflect on one question that you think the world will ask you about your expertise, your offer, your business, your services, your life. And if you answer one question for 5 minutes every day, one different one, after a year, you'll have answered 365 questions about your industry and about your field. So that's number two.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of things in that. And the first thing that came to mind was the elevator speech that the coaches I've had previously would practice. You know, how do you explain what you do for a living in 30 seconds if you were stuck in an elevator with somebody? And so, you know, when you say practice one question every day of the year, you know, for 5 minutes, that's a good way of enhancing not only what you're doing to make it intriguing, but that, you know, to communicate effectively. But the first thing you said before that was this fear of communication. I read in a study somewhere that people are more afraid of speaking in public than they are of death itself. And I was like, why is that? Why would people be afraid of doing that? Is it a self-confidence thing? Is it, you know, is there something more to it? What do you think?
Absolutely, Michael. So here's my theory on this, because I've spent years thinking about it. I look at it more from a common sense perspective, because I don't think it's as bad as death once we understand where it comes from. Mm-hmm. So the first question to ask yourselves is, where do we learn how to present? Because that's probably where the answer is. And the answer is simply the education system, mm-hmm. elementary school, high school. That's where we learn how to speak. But there's three problems with all of those presentations, Michael. Mm-hmm. Number one, all of them are mandatory. We don't wake up one morning and say, hey, Mike, you want to get some breakfast and present all day? Says nobody ever.
Right.
That's problem number one. And there's three. Problem number two, all the presentations are different. You never get to pick the topic. It's never, huh, Michael, what are you passionate about? What are you excited about? Do you like the color purple? Do you want to give presentations about politics? Do you want to talk about your podcast? Do you want to talk about the Invictus Mind? What are you interested in? No, that's not works. You got to talk about the history of Missouri. And then after that, you got to talk about Shakespearean poetry.
Oh, sure.
And then after, yeah. You got to talk about some random book that you don't care about reading that you're forced to read. And then you got to give a presentation on it. Not super fun. And then you think that's the worst of it. Number three, which is the worst of all, every presentation, Michael, is tied to a punishment. So if you don't do a great job, you lose 30% of your grade. Not the best way to learn communication. So what's the conclusion, man? The conclusion is we grow up believing that communication is a chore and nobody wants to get better at doing the dishes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think you said it very clearly there. And in other episodes, I go off about the public education system, and I'll spare you that, that dialogue this time. But I think that the way they teach that skill is often misguiding and leaving people with that, that hesitation about actually becoming a speaker. So thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
All right. Well, so since you did mention that there was three, I think we counted number one and number two. What was the third thing that the third daily challenge we want to face?
Absolutely, man. I love it. You're such a great listener, which is awesome. So the third one, okay, before I even get to the exercise, to everyone who's listening right now, the best way to speak is to speak to you. So the people who are winning this podcast right now, the people who are getting the value are not the people who are taking notes, in my opinion. They are the people who have already booked 15 minutes in their calendar to do these things tomorrow. Mm. So be sure you're booking time in your calendar as I go into the third one. Because all these tips are great, but not on paper. So if you don't do them, you don't get better. But that's it. Let's go to three. So three is so simple, nobody does it. Make a list of the five people you love the most in your life. Mm. It could be your mom, your brother. It could be a client. It could be a family friend. And ask yourself a very simple question. When was the last time you sent them a 20-second, not 20-minute, 20-second video message just telling them how much you appreciate them in your life? And the answer for most of us, unfortunately, is never. Mm. It's never. Forget about posting on social media. I'm not the guy to tell people to post on social. I know how much nerve-wracking it is. But can we send video messages that are private, that nobody else sees, to the people that we care about? And I'll tell you exactly why this is important. The reason it's important is because it helps us realize that even if the video sucks, the person who receives it, it makes their day. Because nobody receives video messages and nobody sends them. So I would start there because it helps relearn that communication is a tool for impact.
Yeah. And a person that you love is not going to tell you it sucks anyway. So you're not going to get that, that slap that'll, you know, prevent you from doing it in the future, right? They're usually there to encourage you and support you and, you know, not only just be appreciative, but it's just going to give you more confidence in that whole thing.
Absolutely.
So I want to go back to your history a little bit, Brendan, if you don't mind.
Please.
You said you were a competitive speaker in school as opposed to an athlete. You know, I was not much of an athlete myself. I was a musician. So kind of in between, I guess, presentation and in athletics, in marching band, I was actually grew up in.
What did you play?
I played trombone in high school. I became a bass guitar player after school. But, you know, one of the things that I know about practice is this word discipline. And I did see one of your videos about the need to discipline. So how does disciplining your skill set really come into a factor to get better?
Absolutely, Michael. And I'm sure you're someone who speaks from experience with all the discipline that it took to get to where you've been in bass and trombone. It's very simple. Discipline is about wanting something so badly that you're willing to stay consistent for a long enough period of time to achieve it. Mm-hmm. That's it. So how does that mean in the context of communication? This is why I am such a bull on the question, how would your life change if you were an exceptional communicator? A lot of people, when they hear that question, Michael, they don't really take it that seriously. They're going to say, oh, that's cute. Brian's being cute today. That's awesome. Love the question. And then they don't answer it. They don't think about it. But the people who really take the time, to reflect on that question, they develop what I call a burning desire to master communication because they start to believe in something much bigger than what they initially thought was useful for communication. Because a lot of us, when we ask somebody, why do you need to master communication? That's the wrong question to ask. The right question is, why do you want to master communication? Why is that important to you? How could it benefit your life? Whereas a lot of people, when you go like, why do you need to do it? They always respond with, well, you know, it could be better for my job. I could get a raise. So it's very chore-like mentality. It's very chore-like responses. Oh, well, if I got better soap, Brendan and Michael, maybe I could do the dishes better. Yeah, maybe I could. Instead of dream a little bit. Let me give you an example.
Sure, absolutely.
Right. For somebody in my life that I met randomly, I don't remember the person's name or even what they were doing. I just remember the story. For them, communication wasn't like a nice to have. It was a must. Mm. They were like, oh my God, like this needs to happen. And I know I initially said need was a bad way, but this is like more in a good way. It's like, oh my God, like I have to get this done. It's like, it's so important because of all the dreams and aspirations I have in life. And I asked him why. And he said for his wife. And I didn't get what he meant. I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, Brendan, my wife doesn't speak English that well. So if I master this English thing and I speak better, I could show her the world and she wouldn't have to learn English because I could just interact and be the liaison and show her all these countries. I thought that was so beautiful. Same thing with me. Like my initial fire was around case competitions, right? What I did for a living. I mean, not for a living, sorry. What I did for fun in university. Mm-hmm. It pushed me to be better because I got super competitive. I wanted my teams to win. But the only way to make my teams win, I need to be the best speaker in the room or else who are they going to respect? If I don't set the bar high for my teams, they're going to jot low.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, how does that play into discipline at the end of the day? I would say you need to find a reason that is so compelling that it forces you to be disciplined. And the question that is a bit more dark that I think you would appreciate is who suffers from your inability to take action every day? Who is the person who is dying right now, who is suffering right now because you're not actually having the discipline to get the job done? That's what I would encourage people to reflect on.
Yeah, that's a deep question there. I was thinking of what you were saying about the story with the guy who wants to be able to be a better communicator to his spouse or for his spouse. And I don't know, Brendan, if you're married or not, but I've been married twice. The second time is much better than the first. But what I've learned is communication is key to any good relationship. And so any men out there listening, you know, knowing how to effectively communicate requires not just being able to be an example and to be skillful at it, but to the second part of communication, I think that we're kind of overlooking here is being able to listen. You know, would you agree with listening in order to communicate properly is a key factor to that.
Absolutely, Michael. I definitely think listening is an important piece too. And that's what we talked about earlier, right? That's why I like to define communication as juggling 18 balls at the same time, because there's so many balls. So definitely for everyone listening, start with the video messages. Start with that. If you just send that to your spouse, it'll make their day, or their husband, your husband, whatever, sure. Like whichever, or boyfriend, girlfriend. Like just sending that is a great start, because they'll already have a different approach. Who's this guy? What's going on here? So listening is the next layer to that, the next ball to drop. And the way that I like to see listening, instead of just saying, you know, you got 2 ears and one mouth for a reason, because you got to listen twice as much as you speak. I got it. I forgot
that's
even
such
who
a
said
cliche
that.
Thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's Aristotle. I think I'm misquoting that. But let me add a layer on top. How do you listen better? So here's the way I see the world, Michael. In life, you can pretty much say two things, questions or statements. So you either ask a question or you give a statement. So obviously in the context of a podcast, I would rather ask you questions and get to know you more. That's why I'm asking a couple. But if we were having coffee, I mean, I wouldn't be yapping this much. I'd be asking you questions, understand more about your life and stuff. But a lot of people in life, a huge percentage of their conversations is statements. Example, I believe this. Well, I believe this. Well, I believe that. Well, I believe this. And it's just statement. It's a ping pong game of statements. Whereas the best communicators on the planet, the percentage of questions versus statements is a much higher on the question side, which means I believe this. Well, why do you believe this? Why is that important to you? What is it about that you find so fascinating? Why is this a problem for you? Why is that important to you? Boom. So they ask more questions. So what's the remedy, quite frankly? The remedy is audit, observe, look into. How many questions am I asking on a day-to-day basis and to other people? And the answer is either zero or one for most of us. In your case, it's much higher because you're a podcast host. You're very good at what you do. But for most of us, it's zero and one. I'll challenge you just to bring that number up to two, then three, sure. Then four, then five.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. In sales training, we used to play a game. It was called the question game. And you had to posit a question. And then the person responding had to listen, and you could not give a statement answer. You had to actually ask a question in return. And sometimes it was silly because, you know, you go from like, oh, what's your favorite color to, you know, what kind of car do you drive? And the communication didn't flow. But if you were actually crafted or skilled at this craft, then you could actually continue asking questions back and forth without having to, you know, change the subject if you were. So I think that's
fascinating.
Very important. It really developed the skills of asking questions, because I really think that is important. And like you mentioned, when you're talking to somebody, here's another cliche statement, right? People don't care how much you know. They care. They don't want to know how much you care. Right? They want to know how much you care, right? I think I said that completely wrong, but that they don't care how much you know, but they're concerned about how much you care about them. So you can only show that care and that concern by asking them questions. Would you agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. It's the idea of questions. I doubt we'll disagree even once on this podcast, to be honest. But yeah, absolutely. I feel the power of questions is so important. But the only caveat that I would add is don't worry too much about the quality of the question just yet. I would say build the muscle first. It's kind of like the whole gym analogy. Sure, you could refine the diet plan. Sure, you can check your calorie intake, but the most important thing is walking every day. Are you walking? And if you ain't walking, you don't have to worry about the rest. So questions is the same thing. Obviously, there's different levels to how I teach people how to craft powerful questions, but I would say the first piece is really just getting the habit of doing it and not being afraid to ask stupid questions. A lot of my questions sometimes, like to my editors, like, how does this work? How does that work? And I just listen, because I obviously know nothing about video editing, and I still don't today. Other people do that for me, sure. Even if I have a YouTube channel. But yeah, it's just asking people, I don't know how this works. How does it work? And so I think the key is just getting into that habit and not being worried about looking stupid or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You mentioned your coaching, and that's obviously why we're talking here. You have a program you call a Master Talk. Where did that name come from?
Yeah, man, the name Master Talk, I got super lucky. I was just, my friend just came up with the name. He's like, you should call it Master Talk. And I looked on the US trademark office. Obviously I have a trademark now, but it wasn't trademarked at the time. And I was like, oh, that's nice, because I wasn't going to call it my name, or else no one's going to figure me out. I'm sure. I got like a hieroglyphic Egyptian, impossible to spell. You pronounce it perfectly, but impossible to get to for the most people.
Sure, sure. So you have the name Master Talk trademarked. So you have a business called Master Talk, or is it just your brand that you use on YouTube? What do you do with that brand name?
Yeah, for sure, Michael. So it's two things. The first one is the YouTube channel, right? We share hundreds of free videos on how to speak with people. That's the mission, right? I think the next Elon can't afford a coach, so create the free videos. And then the other piece is it's a coaching business for executives and entrepreneurs. So I coach a lot of them to become top communicators in their industry.
Okay. And what are some of the top executives, if you wouldn't mind sharing some of the companies? Can you do that publicly?
Yeah. Don't worry. It's only like 10% that I can't share. The other 90% is fine. So for example, I mean, I've coached executives from IBM, Amazon, I just signed Wells Fargo, lots of big companies for sure. And world changers. So a lot of technology CEOs where I help them with their pitch and how to develop their ideas and share them with the world.
Okay. Now, did you go into university thinking, oh, I want to be a coach one day? Or how did that progression change? Because you said that you were a competitive speaker, a competitive presenter. But what did you study in university?
Accounting.
Okay. That's quite a change.
Yeah. It's a huge change, actually. So yeah, my goal was actually never to do this full time. I didn't even think there was a career, to be honest.
Okay.
I was in university and my only goal was to get a job in management consulting at like IBM or McKinsey or Boston Consulting, because they're like big consulting companies. And I realized that to get a job there, I needed to do case competitions. And then I said, what is a case competition? And then somebody explained it to me. They're like, oh, a bunch of executives, they come together, they spend $30,000, $50,000 sponsoring one of these, and their executives sit down and they pick out the best students and they give them jobs. And I said, oh, that seems like my ticket out of poverty. My parents were factory workers. So I said, I wasn't thinking about being an entrepreneur. So I was like, that's perfect. That's my way out. So I started doing these competitions, Michael. I start winning a couple of them. And then the year after, when I was 20, I played more of a mentorship role. I was still competing, but I was also coaching. So I was doing 50-50.
Sure.
And then what happened was, being a mentor, I just looked at our organization's weaknesses, because it's student run. And I was one of the executives who was running the program a year later. I was like, well, 20% of our guys are super smart, but really terrible at communication. Do we have any communication coach? And they're like, what's a communication coach? And I just said, oh, well, I guess it's me. So I just started helping them. That's how that's what happened. Yeah, I wasn't charging them though. There was not for money or anything. I had to coach probably 50, 70 people in 3 years because I just loved it so much. And then when I landed my dream job at IBM, Michael, and I started making really good money, retired my mother and all that fun stuff, I realized that I had a gift. I was the youngest communication coach in the world. Mm. I was like, oh shit. So I just went on YouTube and I started watching all the YouTube videos on communication. And I disagreed with 90% of what was coming out of people's mouth. I was like, that's not how you coach it. That's not how you do it. Because I'm a pure practitioner. I've gotten results real for years since I was 19. That's why I've been doing it for so long. So I was like, no, none of this makes sense. So I started making videos. And then those videos just turned to something I never would have imagined. Now, when I look at my channel these days, I almost can't believe it.
Sure. Well, you know, every mentor, every coach out there has also their own mentor, their own coach. Where did you enhance your skills? What kind of mentorship did you have?
Yeah. So for me, it's a bit different than most people. Obviously, I invest in a lot of those people today because now I have the money for coaching.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm an advocate for it. But when I was younger, a lot of my coaches, you wouldn't know. They don't have any names. So I'll give you an example of what I mean here. Though I always cite Scott Harrison as one of my big influences. He's the CEO of Charity Water, which is a nonprofit he started. And he's been a big influence in my communication style. Gary Vaynerchuk as well. But I would say, in the context of my own learning, it was really the no-name executive. What do I mean by this? So how this program works, Michael, once again, it's weird. It's hard to kind of wrap your head around this because it's such a small community. But basically what happens, you're a 20-year-old kid. It's kind of like you're getting drafted into a professional sports team, but for business. Mm-hmm. So all these executives come and pick and choose the best students in this program, and everybody gets job offers, like multiple jobs. Because who would volunteer to do this for fun? Like, you don't get paid to do it. There's like 8,000 students in our faculty. There's 80 people in this program. So it's 1% of the faculty. It's literally the cream of the crop.
Okay.
So then what happens is, then you get placed into these companies, but you become a vice president like this. like in 7 years. A lot of my friends in the next 2 to 3 years, they'll become VPs of companies, but they'll only be like 28, 29. But what happens after, Michael, those people go back to the program and give back to the next generation. So my coaches were like 30, 40 year old, sometimes 50 executives who used to be in the program, and they were not fun to work with. Let's put it that way. So I learned quickly.
Very cool. Very cool. So the school of hard knocks is always the best way to learn something anyway. So
yeah, that's how I got to where I am today as quickly as possible.
So you offer free resources on your YouTube channel, but there's actual, obviously you have paying clients if you're making a career out of it. But I've seen a handful of your YouTube channels prior to this this interview. So I think that's doing well. And we mentioned earlier, we alluded to the fact that everything kind of changed in this digital age, especially after the pandemic, when everybody is getting on Zoom. I think that the pandemic probably could not have gone down the way it has if it wasn't for Zoom, because the whole world would be in disarray. But a lot of people are definitely learning that it's important to be able to communicate properly. And so coaches like you are important. So the name of your YouTube channel, is it just under your name or is it under that Master Talk label?
You got it, Michael. So first of all, great conversation. Thanks for having me. And then the second piece is there's two ways to keep in touch. The first one, you're right, is the Master Talk YouTube channel. So people can just go on YouTube. They'll have access to hundreds of free videos. And the second way is I do a free workshop on communication every 3 weeks that I facilitate. It's live, it's interactive, it's fun, and it's free. So if you want to join that, all you have to do is go to rockstarcommunicator.com and you can register for the next one.
Rockstarcommunicator.com. All right. Well, Brendan, I definitely enjoy this conversation. I think communication is effective to so many different things in this world. Just enhancing our personal relationships, enhancing our business acumen, being able to sell ourselves effectively, and all those things, in my estimation, it helps us acquire that freedom that at least my audience is really longing for. Because if you can't communicate your ideas effectively, then there's no way you're going to be able to change the things that you want to change about the world. You agree with that?
Absolutely.
So to keep my line of questioning continuing, I got one question for you and you can answer how you see fit.
Sure. Let's do it.
Brendan, are you Invictus?
Am I Invictus? Let me look that up on the internet. Invictus definition. Popular. It says definition of Invictus is a short poem. So I guess I'm not a short poem. Or is my life poetry?
I'll give you a clue. So Invictus means to be unconquerable. So you mentioned a poem. That was actually the poem that inspired me to use that name, Invictus. It means to be unconquerable. And so what I mean is developing the skills, the mindsets, and the acumen to get what you want out of life.
I got you. So a couple of things I'll say. First, notice how the communication coach doesn't even know what Invictus means. So if I could do it, imagine you could do it through life. That's the first piece. The second piece, on a more serious note with Invictus, I do believe I meet the definition of Invictus in spades. And I'll tell you why. You know, Tony Robbins has this great quote. He says that the quality of your life is solely determined by the quality of the questions that you ask yourself about life. Here's my version of the quote, which is a bit different and more tough love. If you ask yourself one hard question about life every day for 30 days, you'll never be the same ever again. Except for me, Michael, I've asked myself hundreds of these questions. If you could only accomplish 3 things before you die and only 3 things, what would you want those 3 things to be and why? If I gave you $1 billion, what would you do with the rest of your life from a time perspective? Not a money perspective. And if you were 99 years old on your deathbed and you had an opportunity to go back to right now, what would you do and why? So you can think of my brain like I'm juggling thousands of different cassette tapes in my mind where I've learned from so many people who've already lived life. And as Viktor Frankl says so well, he says, live life as if you got it wrong the first time and you had a second chance to play the game. Paraphrasing a little bit. So yes, I do believe that my purpose, who I am, how I'm being, is very solid. That's why I've been able to achieve this far so young. But at the same time, the reason I've gotten there is because I stand on the shoulder of giants, of people much smarter than me, that I just decided to take the wisdom of that most people just seem to ignore. So I think that's the difference.
All right. Well, I couldn't have said it better than that. So I think we'll just end it there for the audience. But this has been a very pleasurable conversation. I wish you the best of luck. And once again, if you could just shout out where people can find you.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. Pleasure was mine. So two ways to keep in touch. One is Master Talk, the YouTube channel. Just go on Master Talk on YouTube and you'll find me. And the second way is come to one of my free workshops if you want on communication. And you can register for that at rockstarcommunicator.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Brendan, for your great words of wisdom. And you know, we'll keep in touch. Why don't you stay on the line and we'll end the conversation here. But I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, brother.